This message comes from NPR sponsor, the official Jinx podcast from HBO. The HBO original documentary series, The Jinx, returns for part two on Max as the filmmakers untangle the web of Robert Durst's crimes. Listen to the official Jinx podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
A warning, this episode contains mention of sexual assault. When your bar is overrun by violent creeps, when your town is in the grip of swaggering criminals, what do you need? You need one very, very tough bouncer. Not just a bouncer for the bar, but a bouncer for the whole community. And that brings us, obviously, to Roadhouse.
The new remake casts Jake Gyllenhaal in the role once played by Patrick Swayze and relocates from rural Missouri to the sunny Florida Keys. But there's still plenty of fighting and plenty of brooding. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today we're talking about the movie Roadhouse on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today is Chris Klimek. He's a writer and host of the Smithsonian Magazine podcast, There's More to That. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Linda. You know, Patrick Swayze told me at an impressionable age, pain don't hurt. And now in middle age, I'm wondering what else Swayze lied to me about.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, we have sometimes referred to Chris as our punch-in correspondent, so it's only fair that Chris is present for this incredibly important conversation. The original Roadhouse came out in 1989, around the peak of Patrick Swayze's fame, between Dirty Dancing and Ghost. And it was about a soft-spoken, no-nonsense bouncer named Dalton, who saved a honky-tonk bar and a whole town from a wicked rich guy and his local toughs.
You're too stupid to have a good time.
In the new version, Dalton is now played by Jake Gyllenhaal. He's a former UFC fighter who accepts a job to clean up a seaside bar in the Florida Keys that's being terrorized by a motorcycle gang.
I am afraid. I'm afraid of what happens when somebody pushes me too far. Somebody just like you.
Dalton tries to help the bar owner preserve her family's establishment. She's played by Jessica Williams. He also falls for a doctor named Ellie, played by Daniela Melchior. Billy Magnuson plays a pompous jerk, as he so often does, and actual UFC fighter Conor McGregor makes a very weird appearance as a cartoonish menace destined to face off with Dalton in a final big fight. Roadhouse is streaming now on Prime Video. We should note that Amazon supports NPR and pays to distribute some of our content. I want to establish our various 1989 Roadhouse backgrounds before we get started. As I understand it, Chris, you're a big original Roadhouse guy. Aisha, you saw it once ages ago, and I, realizing I'd never seen the original, watched it right before I watched the remake. So, Aisha, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of this attempt to update this seemingly quite inessential fighting movie?
Well, you know, if you know anything about me, you know that I have a thing about remakes, and I don't really think most of them are necessary. But I think even more so when it comes to a movie like the original Roadhouse, which walks that line between bad, but so bad it's good. And, you know, it's really hard to walk that line. And I think that that movie does so perhaps unintentionally, but then to try and remake that some 30 plus years later and try to keep the same energy or at least like have the same fun energy, I think is hard to do. And so do I think this movie is so bad it's good? No, I'm not sure I do, but it is entertaining. Jake Gyllenhaal makes a pretty good update of the Swayze character, although I do wish he still had a philosophy degree from NYU. That would be really, really nice. nice little touch. But, you know, there are some comedic moments. I chuckled a few times. And overall, you know, it's a movie that I'll probably forget about in a week from now. But I enjoyed it enough. So it's fine.
Yeah. Chris, did you enjoy it enough?
Yeah, I enjoyed it enough. I guess my big relief here is that the basic competence of this movie did not interfere with my enjoyment of it. Like, it's not so much of an upgrade that I am going to call the animating madness of the original is not fully expunged. And I feel like it's kismet that I am with the two of you, Linda and Aisha, to discuss this film because we've litigated many times in the past, a popular action franchise for which you have great affection and which I have none. We don't need to go back into it. But people who love those movies, you know, are telling me like they like the craziness. They like how unplanned everything seems, how contradictory and disorganized. And And I don't feel that in the Fast films, but I feel that so much in Roadhouse 89. Roadhouse 89 has been the Rosetta Stone to help me understand why so many people like those movies. Mm-hmm. And this does come from Doug Liman, who made three or four movies that I really, really like Edge of Tomorrow and Mr. and Mrs. Smith and the First Born. Yep. You know, and Jakey G, real actor. Not that Patrick Swayze wasn't, but he's a Broadway guy. I saw him sing Finishing the Hat. This is a competently made movie, and that's not the catastrophe that I thought it would be. Like, you know, bringing competence to Roadhouse I thought would kill it, and it didn't.
Yeah, and I will say, like, my thought going into this, because like I said, I had never seen Roadhouse 89. I watched Roadhouse 89, and then I thought, well, what do I need from Roadhouse 2024? And I thought, if it's not goofy, there's no reason for it to exist. Because if you've never seen Roadhouse, like, I, having never seen it, I sort of assumed that Roadhouse 89 was kind of one of those, like, action type, tough dude who also has, like, is meeting a girl and all that stuff. It's very much sillier than that.
It's so silly.
It's very, very, very much more over the top than I expected. It turns into, like, the episode of Happy Days where the sheriff is trying to drive Fonzie out of town. So the whole cast has to get together and stand with Fonzie. That's kind of what Roadhouse 89 is like. And so I was like, if they don't bring that weird energy of like the town coming together to support, you know, Dalton in his fight against the bad guys or whatever, then there will be no point in doing this. I do think that it's pleasantly goofy. And I think, you know, Gyllenhaal is a guy who can be a very, very serious actor and can be a very kind of straight down the middle, dramatic, even glum actor, but also is pretty funny. And he's funny in this. And I really liked the way that they, you know, they did the thing that sometimes happens in fun action movies where they kind of will polish off an action beat with a one-liner. You sort of know it's coming and you sort of are expecting it, but yet there's a pleasure in it. Do I have issues with this movie? I do. The women in this movie have nothing to do for the most part. I encourage everyone, particularly in the case of Jessica Williams, to watch her in Shrinking because she's so good in Shrinking and she gets so little to do in this. She does. She's funny. And I liked their chemistry. I kind of wished he was falling in love with her instead of the doctor, who has even less to do.
Yeah.
But there definitely were things about this that brought me a great deal of pleasure. I do want to ask, Aisha, what did you think of the fighting? Because there's a lot of fighting.
Yes. And apparently they're trying to tout this as a movie that did some extra special things with the fighting. They call it like the four pass camera moves.
With the camera moves, yeah.
I'm not going to get into the weeds about, but basically like they shot the fight scenes like multiple times to show different points of view and put them all together to make it flow. Unfortunately, I had to watch this on my computer screen, and I think it kind of suffered in that translation. Yeah. I thought the fighting scenes, for the most part, felt, it could be also just like the camera moved a lot during these scenes. And so it felt a little too, like I wanted it to feel a little bit more intimate and visceral.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the scenes felt a little too like quick and blurry in a way.
Yeah.
I will say one of the first earliest fighting scenes, though, has Jake Gyllenhaal's character Dalton slapping very hard multiple characters. And I enjoyed that.
That is a great little scene. I love that little scene.
It was fun. Then, of course, eventually it gets to the real stuff like uppercuts and all that stuff. But like, I liked the slapping. Flappings are fun.
The slapping was one of the many, many things in this that reminded me of Jack Reacher 2012 and Reacher, the other Amazon series that I just recapped. And it adds to the slapsticky fun quality of those fight scenes.
Yeah.
And Doug Liman has a history of kind of innovating with fight scenes, starting with the first Bourne movie. So this is in that lineage.
It was interesting because, as you say, it's hard to separate what the effect would have been of seeing this in a theater. I did feel like I kind of think this might be a more fun experience in a theater, partly because of some of this stuff about the fights being so choreographed and everything, but also just because there are other parts of the movie, I would say, especially the whole, I think, not very good, very gimmicky Conor McGregor performance, quote unquote, that I didn't think landed, which, and I do want to mention Conor McGregor is very controversial. He's faced repeated assault charges, at least one of which he's pled guilty to. A number of women have accused him of sexual assault, which he has denied. He's made public offensive comments. So really, Controversial is putting it lightly. And I'm not sure why they even cast him, because I think the entire performance is really only there to make certain people in a crowded theater go, woo!
Yeah.
And it sort of feels pointless when he's just out there acting really goofy and kind of cartoony in a way that to me didn't fit into the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And that is very much his UFC persona too. So they're just kind of trading on that.
Right. And it just felt like trading on something that ultimately they didn't get the payoff for anyway. So why bother? I do think the movie, and in other places too, I think it would have been more fun maybe in a theater full of people who would be, you know, as Chris has experienced with me, just kind of going, yay, every time something really absurd happens.
Yeah.
Well, the first time I saw the original Roadhouse was actually a friend and I used to put on like a bad movie night back when we lived in New York. And this was one we chose. And we invited a bunch of friends, like watched it on her rooftop. And that experience, I don't think I would have enjoyed the first one as nearly as much if I had just watched it by myself at home, because
that is how I saw Gymkhana.
Yes.
Yeah. And it has that sort of rah-rah quality to it. I will say also, like, the fact that this is all about fighting and there are no, well, I don't want to say there aren't any guns in either film, but like guns are not the primary mode of how the violence is happening. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say that violence is good in any way, but like there's something about the way that guns have like overtaken film in the last like 20 years that like it's refreshing to see a movie where even if the fighting didn't quite translate for me watching it on my tiny computer screen, it still felt better than like being just like unnecessarily pelleted with like gun, shots, and people dodging bullets, you know?
I
love that. And what is even better than the fighting for me in this is the fighting foreplay, you know, the little speeches, it's another thing that's so much a part of Reacher. It's so much a part of Justified, the series that I loved. And, you know, you have to ignore the existence of firearms for that to work because, you know, in real life, I understand as soon as the guy says the cool line, he turns around and the person he didn't know was there shoots him in the back of the head and that's over. Mm-hmm, so I love this fantasy of the mostly gun-free universe. My favorite thing in a fight scene is when an unarmed person takes a gun away from an armed person. Jakey has a really nice gun takeaway where he breaks a guy's finger in a trigger guard and this. And then, of course, you know, walks away, you know, leaving the other guy ample opportunity to shoot him.
You broke my f***ing finger!
See what I mean? It's really painful. You're not like a piano player or anything, are you?
Jake Gyllenhaal has clearly put in the work for this. If you think Bradley Cooper put in the work for learning to conduct, Jake Gyllenhaal put the work in for this.
Yeah, I want to say something about that. I mean, Conor McGregor, don't like him. So this is really a compliment to Jake. Like, doing fight scenes with that guy, no matter how rehearsed, no matter how many precautions you've taken, I would be terrified.
Yeah. I think that's right.
I wouldn't want to do even a fake movie fight with that guy. So all credit to JKG for throwing himself into that.
But I agree with what you're saying, Chris, about what you called the fighting foreplay, because I think one of the things that really makes the violence in this movie easier for me to take is it is surrounded by a certain amount of jokiness that I think works really well. We alluded to that early scene with the slapping, which just in general has a great setup where he starts talking to them about how bad it's going to be if he beats them up.
Before we start, do you have insurance?
What?
Like, you have medical insurance? Is your coverage good? Like, you have dental?
Oh, haha. Yeah, I'm not the one that's going to f***ing need it.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful little scene. And I specifically would shout out Arturo Castro, who plays this guy named Mo, who is has become one of my just go-to. When I see that guy in a movie, I know I'm going to love him. I know he's going to be great and funny. And he just, to me, every moment that he comes into this movie, he kind of pokes it with a pin and the hot air goes out of it. And it floats in a way that I think is super important for this kind of film, because you got to make sure that you're still kind of putting that silliness into it. And I don't necessarily think it's shot as ridiculously as Roadhouse 89. So you got to keep kind of imposing that silliness on it. And I think Castro is great at coming in and just like, boop. And he just corrects the tone over and over again.
He had some of the best lines in this film.
It turns out these guys, not as nice as I thought they were initially. I just like riding motorcycles, man. But it's really hard to do in South Florida without a group.
And look, Jake, not to say that Jake Gyllenhaal, look, I think at this point he's probably more well-known for being kind of the eccentric goof guy, like between this and his character in Okja and also Ambulance, the Michael Bay movie that was, to me, like, hits that sweet spot between, like, very, very ridiculously silly and also very good. He's operating on a similar wavelength here.
Yeah. The other thing, because I always have to track, you know, how aging changes over time in our relationship to actors and what, you know, age range is appropriate for each part. Jake Gyllenhaal is much closer in age to where Sam Elliott was in the original Roadhouse than to Patrick Swayze, even though he looks very youthful and clearly is, you know, fit and athletic as can be. He is 43 years old. Notable.
Yeah. And Sam Elliott, if you don't know the first movie, played kind of his old friend who came back to town to sort of help him with the bad guys. And there is no equivalent of that here. And I did kind of wish he'd had a friend because I always want people to know someone and have friends. But they do go a different way with more of a loner kind of thing. And when I first started watching this film, I was like, no, I don't like this, because the whole setup of Roadhouse 89, not to be a purist, but the whole setup of it is that he's this professional bouncer who has this very firm grip on this job. And that he doesn't come from a place of just being a guy who gets in fights. He's a manager of people.
He's the cooler. He's in charge of the bouncers.
Yeah, and he's known far and wide for that. And when she brings in Gyllenhaal in this movie, he's a former fighter. And fighting is what he does. And he's never really done, as far as I know, the bouncer job. So at the beginning, I was like, no, you're missing the point. Yeah. And by that, I do mean the point of Roadhouse. But because he says in the original movie, nobody wins in a fight. And they do eventually get around to having Gyllenhaal say that. I don't know if it's as convincing.
So you like to fight?
Oh.
You ever win?
No one ever wins a fight.
It's really the only line callback, which you kind of thought they'd go overboard with that, right? And I think they only do that one line.
Prepare to die. None of that. There's none of that.
I do think there's an attempt to get the be nice until it's time to not be nice
into the
movie. But I think you're right, Chris. I think they're not trying to layer on too many things.
We have not said enough about the fact that Roadhouse 89 is set in a world where bouncers are famous. Roadhouse 89 is Zoolander a dozen years before Zoolander. The whole comic premise of Zoolander being like, what if people cared about male models and knew their names? There is no equivalent of that. And that is the realistic, in air quotes, touch that doesn't quite puncture the balloon for me here, but comes close. Like giving Dalton one a first name. His name is Elwood Dalton, which is one of the many Blues Brothers connections in this movie, along with, you know, beer bottles being hurled at chicken wire protected bands. Yeah, but giving him a real profession, a UFC history that he's haunted by, having nightmarish, you know, traumatic dreams about having killed someone in the ring, I guess. I don't know that I needed all that.
I just loved the idea of a famous bouncer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Where, like, you would go to a bar many miles away and people would be like,
do you know who that is?
I know about him.
Stop.
He's that famous bouncer. Yeah. I agree with Chris.
I'm sure there were many papers, academic papers written about the masculine energy that exudes from the original 1989 film and what that means and what it's supposed to represent. And
seriously.
And like the element of absurdity that I do appreciate that this movie preserves is that when a bar fight breaks out, like, people don't flee the bar.
No.
The band keeps playing. You know, if you've ever been in a metro car where someone hits someone, like, people are out of there, right? Like, no one wants to be around that chaos. But in both versions of Roadhouse, no one is alarmed by the presence of someone having their head slammed into a table 2 feet away from them. The band doesn't stop. I love it.
No, they're into it. It's weird. They're all cheering it on.
The other thing that I love about Roadhouse 89 in terms of bar realism is I love the fact that Patrick Swayze comes in and, you know, it's all full of, like, drunk guys getting in fights and everything. And the owner really just wants to clean up the bar. And what that winds up meaning is it just winds up being a bar full of dorks who stand around. And I was like, oh, good. Perfect. A bar full of dorks. Exactly what everybody wants out of their neighborhood bar. Anyway, it's streaming on Amazon Prime. I think it's a good time. And I do recommend it, as I do the original Roadhouse 89. If you've never seen a polar bear fall on a guy, listen, you just got to do it. We want to know what you think about Roadhouse. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Up next, what's making us happy this week?
This message comes from NPR sponsor Noom. Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. Check out The Noom Kitchen for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. On The Sympathizer podcast, host Philip Nguyen joins the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen to discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. What's the right amount of socializing for you? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can help you figure out your boundaries, how to recharge, and your social sweet spot, so you can build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Try therapy with BetterHelp. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Visit betterhelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Now it is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what's making us happy this week. Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week?
I've got two words for you. Miami Connection. This is a movie that is probably my favorite movie of all time. I feel safe saying this. And it has a lot of connections to the original Roadhouse and this Roadhouse, actually. And this is a film that was co-directed and stars YK Kim, who is a Korean Taekwondo artist who eventually moved to Orlando, Florida, opened his own studio, and then decided to make a movie. And this movie played in like maybe a handful of theaters in 1987, disappeared, but then years later, an Alamo Drafthouse programmer found a copy of the movie on eBay. It got a re-release, and now it's become this, like, cult classic. I have watched this movie an untold number of times. Kim plays a Taekwondo instructor who's also the leader of an electro-synth-pop band called Dragon Sound. And they face off against a bunch of motorcycle baddies and ninjas. It is, if you think Roadhouse is ridiculous, watch this movie. It makes even less sense. And it's just the type of movie that you want to just watch with a bunch of friends. I have introduced this to so many friends. And there's actually a really fun How Did This Get Made podcast episode about it too, which is how I even discovered that this movie existed. Miami Connection, you can find it streaming on various sites. So yes, I can't believe I've gone this long on this show without having ever mentioned it, but it is fantastic. Chris, have you seen this?
I haven't.
Oh my God.
You know, I'm ashamed. Find someone who has a roof and let's do it.
I think it's right up your alley. You should absolutely see it.
Chris Klimek, what other than Roadhouse is making you happy this week?
Well, I'll give a big old plug for my second favorite podcast, Blank Check. This is Griffin Newman and David Sims podcast where they go through the filmography of a director film by film with a different guest for each film. And they have at last arrived at John McTiernan. You know, they've just finished going through McTiernan's unassailable run of Predator, Die Hard, Red October. They've gotten to the more problematic Lorraine Bracco and Sean Connery vehicle Medicine Man now, which was the first movie I ever reviewed. I wrote a review for it for my school paper.
And oh my goodness.
I want to specifically compel people to an episode featuring, I know, another of your favorites, Linda, Mr. Jamel Bowie, the brilliant New York Times columnist, who they have on to talk about The Hunt for Red October.
Of course.
It's a great movie. It's a great run of movies. It's a great podcast. So check out the McTiernan series if you are, you know, anything about Roadhouse appeals to you, but particularly the Jamel Bowie Red October episode of Blank Check.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris Klimek. I am technically about to recommend something that I have not listened to yet, but you'll understand why when I explain this. In 2021, the podcast Depression Mode, which is John Moe's show out of the Maximum Fun Network about depression, where people talk about depression and other mental health issues, had an episode with the very brilliant comedian and writer Joel Kim Booster. And Joel at the time was deep, deep in a depressive episode and is one of the only times I've ever heard somebody be as candid as Joel was being while they're in the middle of sort of the worst of a depressive episode. And he really believed at the time, you know, I'm just getting used to the fact that I'm never going to have another idea again. I don't think I'm ever going to be funny again. And he meant it. And it's a very, very tough listen. But I listened to it. And I appreciated it so much, and I have recommended it multiple times since then to people where I said, if you want to hear somebody being really candid about what it feels like when you're at the bottom of it, listen to this episode with Joel. And I was so pleased to get a notification just this week that Joel came back to Depression Mode to talk about what has happened since then. He, of course, as you probably know, if you follow Joel, has continued to create, has continued to be funny. And I am so excited to listen to it. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet because I know I need like a calm circumstance to listen to it. It's not something that I would listen to like necessarily at just any old time. But mostly, I just want to recommend the show, Depression Mode, out of maximum fun. And that is what is making me very, very happy this week. And I cannot wait to hear from Joel about that. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some additional recommendations, sign up for our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. Chris Klimek, Aisha Harris, thank you both so much for being here to talk about Roadhouse.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all next week.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This message comes from the Pop Culture Moms podcast. Best friends Andy and Sabrina take their obsession with TV and movies to the next level, talking to celebrities about the comedy and tragedy of parenthood and the fictional moms they love most. Listen to Pop Culture Moms wherever you get podcasts.